Artificial intelligence is very top of mind across most industries, and now especially in the world of tech and IT operations. Now, with us again today in this Telemetry Now customer series are Avi Friedman, Joe DiPaolo, and Jezebel Gilmore to talk about AI, real use cases in IT operations, some security concerns and considerations, and how we can look at AI from a high-level executive perspective as well. Now, I love talking about AI, and so I'm very excited about its role in tech and this episode. My name is Philip Gervasi, and this is Telemetry Now. Avi, Joe, and Jezebel, thank you so much for joining me again. It's been really great to record this series of podcasts with you, and I am looking forward to today's episodes, focusing specifically on AI, artificial intelligence. And Avi, you especially, I know, have no opinions about AI, is that right?
None at all.
Yeah, right. But I would like to stay focused today, if you would, on the application of artificial intelligence on network operations, security operations, and IT operations more broadly. Certainly, there's a lot to discuss on the grand scale of our artificial intelligence in in society and in the world and for humanity. But I would like to discuss with you and hear your thoughts about its application, its uses in IT ops. And I think to do that, I think it would be helpful if we started off with hearing your definitions, kind of like your opening thoughts of what artificial intelligence actually is. I know that folks define it in different ways, in different terms, and have different perceptions about what it is from both a technical perspective and even kind of an operational workflow perspective. So why don't we start with that?
I was fortunate enough to be involved in not doing my own AI research, but my uncle was doing AI research in medicine back in the 80s, which was before one of the many AI winters, or few AI winters, that had happened before recent times, back when it was symbolic list machines and fuzzy logic and expert systems and neural nets, which we still use. And at the time, people said, oh, what's AI? I said, AI is the stuff that we don't yet know how to do and teach as a separate class in computer science. And then once we know how to do it, we just do it. And the stuff that we don't know how to do, we keep pounding our heads against. And so it's been interesting to see the evolutions and some techniques become so useful that they can be applied more generally. But nowadays, I just think of it as a set of techniques the net result of is generally helping to automate the humans and making them more productive and powerful. And underneath, is a bunch of technology, hoo-ha, that I think will include even more than the LLMs that has been so hot for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Right. Joe, what's your take?
Yeah, to me, I think much like Y2K or IPv6, AI is something that is now grabbed in the mainstream media that doesn't really have a correlation of reality. And so what I mean is AI has existed in some form for a very long time. You think of things like Grammarly or services where a computer or a technology is interfacing with a user and then interacting in an independent way. And so AI has existed. I think when you look at it from an enterprise or from a mainstream media, that's where obvious points come into where it's stuff we don't really know yet and there's evolution there. And so the one thing I do know is it's not going away, unlike IPv6 or Y2K. It's here to stay. It is a big part of businesses. It's used in every aspect of people's lives, whatever the application is. And so being able to monitor it, to transport it, and secure it is going to be a challenge for network and security operators for a long time.
I know everyone's looking for the equivalent of what Rob Seastrom came up with, the business idea of Y2K Y jelly that you could spread on your network and it would Y2K proof it. Everyone wants the AI magic they can buy and apply. So
Right, right. Well, that's the concern, right? That there's both AI washing and marketing hype, and this is how we can, you know, let's change our branding on our website, or also the FUD, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, as far as like AI eventually developing into some sort of superhuman intelligence and taking over the world, which, you know, I personally, I think is laughable, at least at this stage. And so I do believe, Avi, that you make a point that we're sort of rehashing and rebranding as AI things that we've done for a very long time. So when we're applying some ML models to do some, you know, I say sophisticated data analysis, but it doesn't even have to be that sophisticated. Is that now AI? And if so, doesn't that mean we've been doing AI since we were sophomores in college, when you apply a linear regression model and all of a sudden you can make a simple prediction? Now, certainly that's different than like large language models and the sophistication we have with those. But I do wonder if you're correct that we're half rehashing some of the things that we've always been doing, both in sort of data analysis and even in security operations. I mean, I remember learning about heuristics and how we can identify patterns and then, you know, make some sort of intelligent decision to reduce the, you know, with the false positives and things like that, that my SOC is coming up with all the time.
I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. So yes, there's a lot that is not LLMs and that people have been using for some time in most mature systems to do machine learning. And, you know, the very interesting thing about LLMs is how fast they've been moving and probably are likely to continue to. Now, like the people that, you know, engage in naval contemplation about whether we live in a simulation, I don't personally find it to be that rewarding to think about, well, we have AGI. And I think it's also, you know, the thing that people get confused by is also the wonderful thing about LLMs, large language models. They look like they're thinking, but they're not.
Mm-hmm,
they give you things that you would not have expected as output, which is really intriguing, and we have to think about how to harness. But it seems very easy, and you know, you go to say, "Oh, awesome! I will just ask it how to configure my network," and you know, you could have really big problems that way, because at least your own thinkos that you might typo thinko whatever that are your own things, but like now you're going to debug something that's subtly wrong from something that isn't even thinking; it's just predicting with some randomness. Mm-hmm. We're not there yet, so. How do you tame these things? I think is by a combination of these techniques and some good old human, you know, guidance. You know, it's awesome you can search your knowledge bases, and it's awesome you can have code and explained and help humans learn. But I think it all comes back to how do we use these techniques to accelerate humans, not replace humans? And that, you know, there's been a lot of progress on in the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah, I just gave a talk about this called Using Network Large Language Models in Network Operations, the Human Factor, because it really is all about augmenting a human being, an engineer. So, you know, you're talking specifically about large language models, and I'm glad you are, because that's like the thing that folks are usually referring to when they say AI. They're not usually talking about the more advanced, sophisticated AI workflows and ML workflows and even AGI, although I do see some videos and articles from time to time on Medium and things like that. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, we're talking about folks, you know, using ChatGPT or perhaps another publicly available foundational model, or if they're, you know, really nerdy like me, they downloaded Llama 3.2 on their laptop and they're messing around with it. But ultimately, that's what they're doing. They're using a model that is probabilistic under the hood, meaning, like you said, it's just predicting the next item in a sequence, word in a sentence. So there's no inherent intelligence. But I mean, I say that while also seeing some of the results, very, very powerful. I mean, really neat. And I know that some experts are still trying to figure out where is this emergent behavior coming out of within the hidden layers of some of these neural networks. They don't understand. There's something magical going on.
I would use the word, you know, there's the effect of intelligence in some ways. What there isn't is understanding, which is why I get upset when people say hallucination, because that implies mm-hmm. cognition or thinking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it isn't. Thinking that was what some of the earlier techniques were trying to model. The idea was, you have enough neurons and you do enough stuff. But we're not really training LLMs to be exactly like the human brain. We don't really think that's the totality of what we're doing, is just being mm-hmm. pattern matching. We have thought mm-hmm. and cognition and explanation. And most of what people are talking about in terms of advancing LLMs is not being able to explain, I'll use a big word, the semantics of what this stuff is, but just what data input changed their predictions. That's the XAI version, you know, for LLMs. But because there are these really cool things that it can do at a baseline, if you're willing to accept some maybe correct, maybe not, I think the real question is, how do companies that have data sets and models and humans harness the larger set of things that you might be surprised by that they can almost answer to filter out the, bullshit and accelerate humans with confidence? That's the challenge for companies and vendors, and that's the fun part.
I think that's my cue. And so, again, shameless plug, but what we found at Netskope is the AI consumption and use in enterprise followed the same path as social media. So in the early days, 5, 8, 10 years ago, enterprises just blocked all social media, right? And then it became a useful tool for companies to want to use it. So then they had to use filters. And that's where Netskope allows for enterprises to filter applications, but also the content within the applications. A bank can use Twitter, but they can't actually talk about stock symbols and things like that. What we found in AI was that the enterprises are very unaware of the data sharing and what's going up into the cloud. We have a customer that was sending all of their Zoom calls into the cloud for notes, and we have them sending proprietary code base into there for editing. And so there definitely is, like I keep using this word, but there is the evolution of this type of a technology where the enterprises are unaware of how AI is being used in their environment, and that the data loss, the IP loss, you know, if you're going to have FUD over anything around AI, it's the fact that you have a leak in your environment. And if you block AI altogether, then you're limiting capability. The amount of we use AI in machine learning in our product, we use it in our operations, and the value we get, the lift, the feature functionality, but also the man hours replaced. It's incredible. And so you're going to have to figure out how to live with it, but also protect yourself, because these enterprises are unaware of the weapon that they have, you know, given their employees.
I have to assume it's also an attack vector that some folks, or rather it's a new attack surface that folks can use. You know, I was just talking to somebody recently who said, you know how, like, you can just, like, if you're not really that great with Python, you can just ask ChatGPT to create a Python script. Well, what if you are like an entry level bad guy? Now you can ask it to, like, write the Python script to create the ransomware or do the thing that you might otherwise. So it lowers the barrier to enter, like, the criminal sphere. That boggles my mind, because I don't think that way. You know what I mean, Joe?
Right. Yeah, 100%. And again, it's one of those things where if you're using maybe a less reputable AI service and you're uploading data, your data is going to be shared in that learning process and people have access. And so the amount of phishing and spoofing and stuff we're seeing is incredible. Not to mention, the fraud that happens externally. But like you said, it won't take much now for your script kiddie to go to AI and ask him, hey, what data is available? What do you see? Where would you attack this? Well, write me a tool or a simulated email. I had an employer a few jobs ago basically give a bunch of approvals for paying money that wasn't real. And so it's going to be rampant in as a tool to be used for crime. It's going to be rampant for enterprises to manage their business. It's an incredible vector in the sense of nothing has ever been created that is so beneficial yet so vulnerable at the same time. It's going to be a hell of a show for the next so many years.
It sounds like AI is something that you can't live without, but you also are going to have a really difficult time managing to figure out how to leverage it to both protect and your success and from the challenges, the security challenges that you may have. How should the executives think about this, right? And if you were an engineer, you may have a way of looking at it. If you are an executive, you have responsibilities to the company, to both grow the company and protect it. So how would one look at AI?
Yeah, that's a great question. And It's something that I think the first step there is to be aware, right? So you can't assume or turn a blind eye to it and assume it'll figure out. You have to have visibility into, you have to have a policy, you have to have visibility into that policy, and then you have to have an understanding of the impact. And so our favorite thing to do at Netskope is we ask the CISO or the CTO or CIO how many cloud applications they think they're using, and they say 3 or 4, and we show them it's 150. Right. And so the same thing happens in AI. If you ask a CTO or a CIO or a CISO how many AI interfaces, they're going to say, we use ChatGPT. And the reality is it's probably dozens, if not 50. And so that visibility into the AI application, how it's integrated into their workforce. My example earlier about the company that was using Zoom to record all of their internal calls, like, you're going to have track and visibility into that, because when you get exploited or have a problem in your board or your shareholders are asking, how'd you let it happen? You can't say, well, I didn't know it was happening. And so visibility is the key, you know, and being able to see what's happening in your shop.
Yeah. The good news is that there's a framework. So let's all hail and thank GDPR for sub-processors that security groups have led and privacy groups for years now, which the AI tools fit into. What are those tools and can they be captured, like with social media, probably has run ahead of people realizing it. I can say I'm pretty sure that most executives are aware that they need to track these things down, and SaaS applications and all these things, and have this. And, you know, the AI, even the SaaS vendors that were sub-processors, you know, got into some trouble. Some people definitely got their hands slapped for saying, oh, but, and by the way, we changed our policies and we can use all your content, you know, to train our AI. And that didn't last very long. I won't name any names. So I think the good news is some of the frameworks that we've had in place for privacy protection have become frameworks that force us to review these things. And I know, you know, Kentik, we're large enough. We have all these things too, that we have to, you know, track and review, and no, you can't have that tool until we go and talk to them. But then, yes, how do you actually get that estate and that understanding, and how do you apply policy to it, has caught up, been a lot of work on that in the last year. So it's definitely top of mind for folks, and people looking for services that can help them tame the complexity and impose policy.
But certainly, in spite of these security concerns, and we need to discuss those and understand those and look at those from a technical perspective, policy perspective, and Jezebel, as you said, from an executive decision perspective, there must be some use cases that we can point to for using specifically large language models in network operations, security operations, IT operations more broadly. Avi, would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I mean, please elaborate. What do you believe are the specific use cases for LLM?
Wait, there's more.
But wait, there's more, right?
Yeah. So, you know, we see a few really good use cases for LLMs. One of them is the Copilot, one of the biggest things they've been great for is parsing lots of content and making it accessible in English, so natural language processing. And not just English, but the language. So if you build a Copilot and use some of these models that are trained, you can also use them as translators and get not full accessibility, but a lot. We're seeing a lot of our customers actually try to build this themselves, where they're trying to tie all their different tools in. So for example, we have API we can expose so that when someone's trying to build the Uber Copilot, they can actually ask us in language instead of API. All we're doing is turning it into API internally, but at least they don't have to then understand the network widgets and words and all those things that are not in the generalized models.
Right.
You know, a second thing is explaining. So if you're trying to learn something, I'll use, you know, not maybe Kentik example, but we see this a lot for code. It could be the same thing. You dump your configs in, you can ask a question. So you have to realize it may not be completely accurate. But one of the things that it has proven pretty good for is, hey, I want to understand a config without going and reading all the manuals. So this is an example of accelerating humans. So please explain to me You know, what does this config line mean in this context? And, you know, has been pretty effective at taking the knowledge base type stuff and the pre-trained type stuff and the actual config and helping people. So that really can help. Now, would I say, LLM, please translate this Cisco config to Juniper config and just dump it into the router? No, I would not. And it's really important, just like GPSs were, you know, 15 years ago, to view it as a precocious 14-year-old and not, you know, if your spidey sense tingles that maybe something's off, you know, and you should review it. Because if you don't understand, well, as I said, there's no understanding in LLMs. It doesn't actually understand right. either. So, but that still is a huge accelerator. I mean, I did a lot of work in the 90s to just try to explain all this BGP stuff, you know, and prefixes and NLRI and all this, because, you know, it can be really hard to understand, and anything that accelerates humans, that can be really great. And then the third thing, and this is, you know, that we see, this hits us a lot, is it can be useful to try to pull together insights and potential root causes. The only thing is, you really better have a system that's rooted in the data and the meaning and understanding to check whether it's spewing bullshit or not, or right. you could just waste a lot of time. So, but because there's emergent behavior, because it understands, you know, it can effectively parse language and translate. Again, I use the word understand when I don't really think it does, you know, understand in that sense. Can be very useful for generating insights and analytics if you can tame it properly. An example of the way right. we would do it is to say, hey, show me the things that you think are interesting. And then we look at our actual topology database and say, is this stuff even related? Because sometimes, again, the LLMs will think there's something going on when there isn't. But it mm-hmm. can give you some things to look at that you can use other techniques to winnow down that turn out to be very, you know, interesting in helping people with analytics.
Right. Yeah, there's certainly ways that we can mitigate hallucinations and ensure a greater level of accuracy. I say mitigate, not solve, because even the underpinnings of how a large language model works, you know, you're talking about the quality of your training data. And then after your training data, you're talking about the quality of the data that you're pointing to. You're talking about your decision of which vector database that you've chosen. Perhaps there's a problem in incorrect semantic proximity when you use your own RAG system. There's so many things involved. But there are, but like you said, it's iterative. We're not, you know, relying on it to run our networks just yet. But it's certainly a helpful tool for a human being engineer that's just running a network and running a SOC. You know,
when are we going to get to the, you know, I need a pilot program for B-212 helicopter. Hurry, so you know I can get information. You know, you talk about having to be able to absorb information faster, and you know, can I have it implanted? Can I have it downloaded? Like, at what point that internet, I am part of internet, that and you're part of internet, that it is no longer a thing that we define as, you know, you have to have some sort of connection to, you have to have a device to connect to, and how does that affect us?
Yeah, it's interesting. Your question actually made me think of something, which was I talked earlier about how the edge is blurred, right? How between increased edge bandwidth and device power, but now you also, the AI also blurs the line between capabilities. I think Phil talked about just some entry level bad guy creating whatever. And so now you have bandwidth, you have blurred edge, and then you have all the compute power you can think of, you know, for $19.99. And so it is going to be very interesting from that perspective. Your question was more about, you know, how it integrates more and how it becomes part of our life. And, you know, and the chip gets embedded, I guess, if you will. But I think definitely during our lifetimes, we're going to see the merging of that, where AI will be just part of everything and there won't be as much interaction. And then the capability and the access to things is going to be unlimited. It's going to be, it's inevitable, I think, you know?
Yeah. I just read a paper over the summer. So not just recently, called Situational Awareness, that was making the rounds in tech circles, talking about the exponential curve and the orders of magnitude of improvement, just as an example, between like GPT 3.5 and then 4, and its ability. So there's no rule that says that we're going to continue to follow that same curve. But if we do, I don't know, Joe. That's a little bit concerning. Yeah. That's an understatement.
Yeah, and I can tell you from just pulling it down to physical layer, we're running out of power, right? And so there is probably, since the dot-com days, there's more money now being pumped into AI, whether it's technology, interface, and or the infrastructure. I know a stealth public cloud company that's going to build these massive GPU centers, the power plants. And so it's going to be affecting all aspects of our life, from physical infrastructure to interfaces. And so if you're an enterprise person and you're not, if you don't have a strategy on how to protect yourselves from AI attacks, how to consume AI to advance your business, or you know, how to make sure you're controlling your employees' use case. And I can see why it's a scary thing, why there's a lot of FUD around it. So, you know, you better get paying attention.
Yeah, I think the human factor is going to be increasingly important on the security side. You know, we've been aware that, I don't know that I agree with the assertion that you just need to assume that you've been breached, you know, as a baseline of security. I wouldn't say that, but there's definitely people that have been saying that, you know, you can't prevent, at least. And there was always the question of the insider as being, you know, how important is that versus the outside. But now that the humans who are the business, you know, it can be even harder to stay ahead of the bad gals and guys and, you know, understand what's real and what isn't. Training, awareness, you know, and just, you know, being out there and understanding, it's just another area of technology to track and advance. On the other hand, makes the business more effective. And I think the services are coming about that are going to help with this, and net will be a benefit. I don't think a lot about AGI, but I think, you know, Christoph, who runs product for us, has been pretty firm. We've got at least another, you know, 2, 3, 4 cycles of every 6 months, the net effectiveness of the LLM-based techniques to at least surface possibilities and mimic, you know, human behavior is going to double. So we've got our own Moore's Law-like thing. I don't know if someone's named it. And if you aren't taking advantage of those things, your competitors will be. And if you're not thinking about what those potential impacts will be, again, your competitors and the bad folks are. So I still think it's net exciting. I think it can really, I don't want to talk about poetically about bringing humanity into a new era, but help humans focus on what they're best at. It just requires a little bit more bullshit detection, you know, from all of us and training around it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to mention that when digital calculators first came out, it didn't presuppose that therefore no one knows math anymore and that all math was solved, but it was a tool in our hands, a human being, like you said, Avi. And the same thing with like early spreadsheets, like what was the precursor to Excel? Like Lotus Notes. Now we can do that.
VisiCalc and Lotus 1, 2, 3. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Whatever one you want to choose, but certainly that was yet another tool like the calculator that allowed us to do those things and at scale. Yet we still have a lot of accountants, and I just got a letter for 2024 tax preparation. He charges a lot of money. So there is still that perspective that these technologies are tools in our hands to help augment us as, in our case, engineers, security engineers, network engineers. But like with any new technology, any new tool, there is a concern about using it properly and safely, which of course, Joe, I'm sure you would agree.
I'll give you an example that I got from two angles. One first was my father, and then was my physics teacher, which was basically you should know what the answer is before you ask the device. And again, LLMs can sometimes surprise us with this, but my physics teacher explained, you know, if you get all the numbers right, but the exponent wrong, that's the difference between a chemical reaction and a nuclear reaction. And the same thing, you know, if you know the order of magnitude, you should know, understand within 10, you know, a factor of 10, the order of magnitude of what the tip will be, even if you get confused, you know, not confused, but even if it's slow to multiply six times the number, should be able to figure out within a dollar, you know, what to, whether it's dollars or cents or whatever. And it's always been the same thing with the spreadsheets and with models. And you should, if the answer is surprising, you should think about it. But that also means we shouldn't be like, you know, in Idiocracy and just depend on, you know, the computers to do everything. So what? Automation. I don't think we're going to get into automation and intent in this podcast, but that is a big use of LLMs, as, you know, Phil, you did the presentation on. And that's really one of the big burning questions is when are we going to have the make it so command, the opposite of rancid, the, you know, push the button, you know, make it so number one. But that requires, you know, again, knowing that you're not going to subtly confuse things and make things worse. So I think we're getting there. I think these techniques are really going to be really helpful. But, you know, I think I wasn't at AutoCon, but just looking at the presentations, it's better than a bunch of people banging on routers with wrenches, which was the 90s. But it's still a bunch of toolkits that you have to use and figure out for yourself. So it'll be really interesting to see how that evolves, you know, and for the enterprise beyond just, you know, lifecycle automation interfaces, you know, systems of record and things like that. And so it's a great time to be alive and watching if you're nerdy and find this stuff fun.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is that it's not even the large language model that does that analysis and does that button pushing. That's just the human interface, like you were saying. It just makes it easier. The barrier of entry is lower. But GPT and Claude and name your model can't actually do the sophisticated data analysis. You know, they're the semantic framework. So I think in 2025, we may be having another discussion, Avi, Joe, Jezebel, on, you know, agentic AI and how we can kick off a very sophisticated workflow without knowing anything about it, just using natural language in some kind of a chat assistant. So Joe, as we kind of wrap up here, what are some steps or ways of thinking that folks in technical leadership and maybe even executive leadership can take, can approach this entire matter around using AI, which we've established is can be a very useful tool for enterprises, right? We kind of settled that. But how can we do it safely, securely, and mitigate risk as much as possible? I know you can't like completely eliminate it, but what can we do to mitigate it and use it safely?
Yeah, that's a great question. And a lot of our customers and peers in the industry are trying to solve this. And I break it down into pretty much two simple steps, right? The first one is visibility into what is being used, and where and how and all the things. So you need a tool to have that interface to be able to understand. And then the second is whether it's filter or block, right? So it's not unlike your network, right? You have to know what's going through it and you have to know if you want it to go through it. And so if you're an executive or a leader or somebody responsible for the consumption of AI within your enterprise, you need to make sure you have a very comprehensive visibility into how it's being used, and then ultimately some controls on if you're going to be able to filter, block it, limit it, and understand it. Because just like the internet, just like social media, like anything, it can be a very useful tool, but also very dangerous. And so we've talked a lot about on the podcast, a lot of the scary things, a lot of the potential, a lot of the amazing things that'll be productive, but visibility and then the ultimate control is the short term, the only way to really understand and protect yourselves from AI. All the other use cases about taking over the world and all the bad guys, we'll leave that for Hollywood for now. But from an enterprise perspective, just focus on that visibility and ways to control and steer your users to the right services.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Having an inventory, understanding, tracking, so that visibility and control, training, again, I don't think anyone needs to know that that's something that people are, you know, but decide, is that going to be something that you expect everyone to do on their own, which then could get into people maybe playing with, you know, models and some corporate data that they shouldn't. So, you know, policy training, technology training, you know, is also important in this. And then the last part is, as I think Joe mentioned also, just make sure your vendors are part of this, you know, system. So both directly what models and other things you're using, but also to be auditing your vendors. But I'm sure that we see most of our larger customers, enterprise and our service providers or enterprise in this regard, already have that into their privacy and security review frameworks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to remember that a lot of the best practices and security workflows, data hygiene that we've been doing for years and years in IT in general, with regard to data in motion, and the policies and workflows that we have in place in our organization, the oversight, and how we deal with storage and encryption, and all of those things are foundational and applicable to any new technology that comes down the road, including AI right now. Of course, AI has certain new challenges that we have to solve, but I think having that foundation is still where we need to start. Now, with that, Avi, Joe, Jezebel, we're going to close out now, and it's been a pleasure to have you on again in this customer series of Telemetry Now. I look forward to the next one soon. Now, to our audience, if you have an idea for a show or you'd like to be a guest on Telemetry Now, I would love to hear from you. You can reach out to us at telemetrynow@kentik.com. So for now, thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.